This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is hour number three. We have top five and bottom five coming up this hour after 2 weeks in the National Football League, which I have to admit, a little easier to do than week one, but still processing a lot of teams that are 1-1 as to the good 1-1s and the not-so-good 1-1s. It was a little bit more complicated, but nevertheless, we got top five, bottom five coming up in just a little bit. All right, I got a little gripe. It appears that there have been some college football writers that have disappointed that game day is not going to for Duke, Kansas. By the way, because you don't know, Duke and Kansas are both 3-0 on the season, and it felt like it was a pretty good non-conference matchup. Instead, game day is going to Knoxville as Tennessee takes on Florida. It's a top 25 matchup. And while it has not been the rivalry that it used to be back in the day when Steve Spurrier and Phil Fulmer used to go back and forth and Peyton Manning and Danny Werfel were the two top quarterbacks and they were going back. And they had some great, great matchups. But Danny Werfel, by the way, always, always won those. Peyton Manning never defeated Florida in his entire time when he was at Tennessee. Never once. But nevertheless, that's where game day is going. Tennessee is ranked 11th and Florida is ranked 20th. And there was a kind of a thought like, oh, spice it up a little bit and give it to... Stop it. Just stop it. I'm sorry that that game day is going to a major SEC East matchup. I am sorry that the atmosphere in Knoxville is going to be extremely electric to a point where it's going to be crazy. There is a buzz now about the Volunteers. I know it's not leaked out as much, but I should say that the game day was supposed to go to Lawrence for Duke, Kansas, because that's where it's going to be held. Tennessee is exciting football right now. Now, they played one game that mattered in their schedule, and that was going up to Pitt and beating a ranked Pitt team in overtime. But that's an electric offense. Florida's struggling a bit. They're not as good as we kind of thought after beating Utah. They lost their game to Kentucky, and then they barely escaped South Florida. But nevertheless, this SEC matchup in the top 25, especially a program that is feeling like it's coming back after a long time of not being relevant, is going to be a great atmosphere. I don't know if the atmosphere at David Booth Kansas Memorial Stadium is going to be as good.
Kane is in the building.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, it's time for top five and bottom five. 2 weeks into the NFL season. Who do we like? Who do we not like? Yeah, this gets changed a lot, but a lot of these teams that you're going to start hearing now might be around week in and week out on both sides. But we're going to start with the top five, going from five to number one. This wasn't as difficult for me, but I had a little bit more fun with it because, you know, I try to reward a little bit here, and I'm going to start with number five for me, and that's where I put the Eagles. The Eagles are doing things right. The Eagles have built a team around Jalen Hurts. They got him an offensive line. They got him weapons. They're letting him use his talent. He showed them why that investment was worth it. He went out there and ran for two touchdowns, threw for another. He has been good so far this season to a point now where the Eagles are off to a 2-0 start. And you know what? The game against the Lions got back in that one to open up the season. But last night was a good showing. They got the interceptions that they needed from, you know, Darius Slay got two from Kirk Cousins of the three he threw. Eagles are five.
See, number five for me. I didn't know. I'm not trying to be a homer here. I'm not biased or anything like that. But I kept the Chargers in my top five.
All right.
I think I had them last week. I think I had them at four. I dropped them down to five this week because they did lose to the Chiefs. But it was a really good game, a game that they led for most of the way and then just, you know, one I'm not even saying it was a bad throw. It was just, you know, it was a situation where the tight end wanted to come off the field, and yet you threw it to him again. So you need to be aware of those type of things.
Right.
But, you know, had the Chargers beaten the Chiefs like it looked like it was going to be, you know, we might be having the Chargers way up there. I couldn't drop them out of the bottom or the top five. Plus, Justin Herbert proved that he's a real man.
Yeah.
That he's playing a grown-up game now.
That throw, when he looked like he was really hurting and should have been taken out of the game for good, he threw that dart, man.
Yeah.
That was incredible. That's funny that you mentioned that, because that's how I have them. I have them at four. I kept them in the top five, and I put them at four because I agree with you. Look, there are games that you play well, you make a mistake, but you play well, you just lose. There's nothing wrong with losing if you play well. Sometimes the ball just gets away from you. That one interception was a miscommunication. The guy was trying to get out of the game.
Yep.
All right, and it was just...
Shouldn't have thrown to him.
Miscommunication. The Chargers should have gotten him out of the game. But that showed grit and determination. That rib injury was real. He played through it. Made it a very, you know, interesting game at the end. I don't think the Chargers are going away. A healthy Justin Herbert, this team is going to come at you every single week you play him. I'm not going to fault him for the loss. They're the only 1-1 team that I have in my top five, but I have them as four.
See, now I'm feeling guilty, or I'm feeling bad, because I did it this way. Number four for me, this is where I put the Eagles.
Okay, no worries.
And the reason why I put the Eagles there is because they're 2-0.
Yeah. Well, no, they looked great last night.
They did. They looked great. They beat a Vikings team that had no problems week one, where I had the Vikings in my top five last week.
Yeah, that was a good showing against
the Packers.
Just because
of what they did against the Packers, the Eagles looked like they didn't even struggle against the Vikings.
I forgot to mention, Darius Slay had two interceptions, but he held Justin Jefferson completely in check.
God.
I mean, he really held him in check. So
did he even play?
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
That's the thing with the Eagles. Like there is, it's not just Jalen Hurts. There's... Yeah. Everything around him is.
See, I'm not, I can't be a full believer in Jalen Hurts just yet, but I'm getting there.
Yeah, me too.
You know, I'm really liking the way he's playing. I'm liking, you know, the direction this Eagles team is going. I mean, listen, I picked them to win the NFC East this year. I don't know, you know, how long of a winning streak they can keep up at the beginning of the season. I know they're going to get some and probably drop some really awful games, but. As of right now, I mean, they're looking good. Number four.
Yep. All right, number three for me, this is where I put the Miami Dolphins. Oh, boy, do I like the Dolphins. I don't know how much I like the Dolphins, and I don't know where they'll be down the road, but I like them right now. I think this Tua Tagovailoa is an interesting story, really, because this was supposed to be the year that they're kind of figuring out if he's going to be the future, and that I never liked that with a quarterback. Daniel Jones is going through that with the Giants. I never like that with a quarterback because I think you got to let him be able to go out there, try some things, make a mistake or two, but come back from those mistakes. I think that what happens is you just add pressure on top of pressure on top of pressure. And the way he responded in that fourth quarter, yep, he's got the weapons. There's no doubt about it. But the quarterback has to deliver the ball to the weapons, and he did do that. They're 2-0, and they're an exciting 2-0. They just took down they took care of the Patriots with no issues. And this Ravens game was fun, back and forth football. I like the Ravens too. I like the Dolphins better at 2-0, and I think a game could be interesting against the Chiefs next weekend.
I like that pick. I opted to keep my Chargers in than putting the Dolphins in there, but I can see the Dolphins sneaking back, getting into that top five for me very easily. But next week, but number three for me, I went with the other team in Florida. Jacksonville. No, I'm just kidding. I went with the Buccaneers. I wasn't all too impressed with the way they won, but it's the fact that they just know how to get it done time after time after time. And, you know, when you have a 45-year-old, 46-year-old, I don't even know how old Tom Brady is anymore. We've talked about it so much, it escapes my mind. He'll just keep finding a way to win. Marital problems and all, he'll find a way to win.
I think the Buccaneers defense is a fantastic part of their story. I think the offense is slow right now. It'll get better.
Yeah.
Mike Evans is going to be out one game. He's already down Chris Godwin. That could be a real problem, but I think you're right. Brady that just goes, I'll find whoever's catching the ball, just catch the ball.
But as we saw before the game, he has Odell Beckham Jr. coming.
That's right. Yeah, that's right, right?
Would that be the least shocking thing?
No, no, of course not. I think all these wide receivers want to play one round with Brady chucking them the football. Of course. No, I agree with you with the Bucks. I left them out of the top five. I thought both games were, but
yeah.
But their defense is great. Their defense is really good. It's going to win them games this year. A lot of games.
Now I'm going to assume that our 2-1 are the same.
Yeah, the Chiefs for me at number two, and then the Buffalo Bills are number one.
Same here.
Just the Bills. Like we've been saying all morning. It's
scary.
Unfair right now. I don't know where to put them. I mean, but you know what? I've seen teams like this before. I've seen juggernaut teams that know how to do it on both sides of the ball. But I think the thing is, and I think the Bills, what makes the Bills interesting is it's been building to this. The window for them is bigger because their quarterback is young. Like the Titans window is closing because their quarterback is not really the guy that I don't think is going to be the future. We talk about the Cincinnati Bengals with Mike Petralia last hour. The Bengals' Super Bowl window isn't closed because Joe Burrow is going to be in the league a long time. And when you have the quarterback, you can do what the Patriots did and just go, you know what? Fill all the pieces around you. But right now, the Bills have the best offense and the best defense together. And I think this is one of the best starts I've seen a team have. I'll have to look at, I'll have to go through my history and really make sure. But the feeling I have about this team and what they've done in 2 weeks, I know there's losses coming. We'll see how it comes. But right now, I'm so impressed with what they're doing.
No, I'm the same with you. The Bills to me are clearly above everyone else right now. And it's not even, it's a runaway contest at this point.
If there was a lot of pride, like if there was a style points thing like it is in college, they could have put 60 plus on the board against Tennessee.
Yeah.
They could have put 60 points. But they always, they call off the dogs and they embarrass other coaches.
And number two, the Chiefs being number two, for both of us, it's just that, this team has been so consistent, for now 4 years at least?
Yeah.
5 years? It's getting annoying, frankly, especially being a Chargers fan, like constantly having to look up at them. It's like, I'm done with you guys. Come on.
The thing about the Chiefs is, again, it is the way he's spread the ball around. Don't get me wrong.
He hasn't done that really in the past.
Yeah, he's done it. He's hit Travis Kelce and a couple of other people. But Tyreek Hill was his main guy as far as wide receiver. And now he's finding others. I'm spreading this around a lot. He utilizes everybody he has. He reminds me of a cook that is like, we don't waste any ingredients here. Like, we're using all of the chicken. We're using all of he is using everything the Chiefs have given him. They're like, here are these other receivers. Here are these other people. He's like, fine, bring them in. We don't waste anybody on this team. You will be used. I will use you. I will find a role for you. I will find an opportunity for you to catch a pass on third down or to extend a drive on second down. All of that stuff. That's what he's doing. And so that's why, that's why they're still in the top two of the NFL.
But yep.
Look out for those Dolphins, man. I'm telling you. Fun football team.
I liked them. I rewarded the Eagles and the Chargers over the Dolphins. But, I was so close. Dolphins for me were like 5B at this point.
Yeah. I mean, they play the Steelers on October 23rd.
Right, obey, but next Sunday is the game
Bills.
Of the week.
That's
Bills Dolphins.
Great. That's going to be great. I'll probably end up with the lowly Titans playing.
Probably, yeah, right.
Somebody, and I don't get it.
Yeah, I'll get another team.
Right, exactly.
I might talk about in the next segment.
Yeah, let's get to that. We'll have bottom five coming up next on Twitter at Tony D Radio at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. We continue with the Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, we're now time for bottom five. And bottom five is a little interesting because bottom five, for me anyway, I can't speak for Ron, but for me anyway, it's really kind of a snapshot for me. I mean, there are bad teams that we know will probably be bad, but maybe they got a win this weekend, but we know they're bad. But I also look at the way, maybe you are disappointing. Maybe you are a team that's not living up to expectations, and that could put you in the bottom five too. So with that being said, that's where I'm going to start with number 28. There were a lot of candidates for this slot. I will tell you a couple of them that I didn't put in the bottom five, but the one I did put is an 0-2, you should be better than this. I put the Tennessee Titans. Now, I'm giving away a little bit here. I didn't put the Raiders at 0-2, and I didn't put the Bengals in at 0-2. These are two teams that I expected to make the playoffs that are struggling. But I chose the Titans for this reason. They lost to the Giants where they had a 13-0 lead at halftime, and they got annihilated by the Bills. Now, you might say, oh, but getting annihilated by the Bills, hey, all good teams. 41-7 is a – yeah. 41-7 is a shellacking. And a shellacking in a game where you pull the starters out in the fourth quarter. That game was an absolute mess. Now, again, they're going up against the Bills, but there's a lot of – Mike Vrabel has a lot of work to do on this team. This team is not going to go play well unless they fix a lot of problems on this team. So maybe it's more of a local bias for me because I'm in the belly of the beast. But of the three teams that I mentioned that are 0-2 but should be a playoff team, the one I'm giving up as the bottom – as the number 28 team is Tennessee.
I left Tennessee out.
Okay.
I did.
I understand.
I easily could have filled the bottom five with just South teams, AFC and NFC.
Right.
In fact, most of my teams, you know, here's foreshadowing for you. Most of them are in the South. Wink, wink.
Right.
But my first one is not. Number 28 for me, this is where I have the Bengals.
All right.
Even before we spoke with Mike Petralia last hour, I knew the Bengals were going to be in my bottom five simply because I did the math as well as he did. And I said, how can Joe Burrow, Super Bowl runner-up Bengals, lose to Mitch Trubisky and then follow that up with a Cooper Rush?
That is, you know what? You're right. Even Daniel Jones, Josh Allen doesn't match up with Mitch Trubisky, Cooper Rush.
Cooper Rush. What is a Cooper Rush? We're still trying to figure that out. And you know, I love seeing the fan blogs and stuff on there. Like, oh, Cooper Rush, he could be the new quarterback for the Cowboys. Like, no, he won't. But he is now.
Yeah.
And you know what? Maybe I am wrong because Dak Prescott wasn't supposed to take over for Tony Romo that soon.
No doubt. Yeah.
But I do have this thought that's running through my head, and I can't shake it, and it makes me afraid. Is Joe Burrow our generation's Dan Marino? Now, I'm saying this because, you know, he's a great quarterback. We've all been saying this narrative, oh, don't worry about that loss, Joe. You're going to be back again.
Yep. We may never see the Bengals in the Super Bowl again.
Never see them in the Super Bowl again.
They're running into a conference that has got a massive juggernaut in Western New York and in Kansas City.
And that's exactly what happened with the Dolphins. With the Dolphins and Dan Marino.
Yeah.
Dan Marino made it early on in his career. What, second year in his career?
Super Bowl 19, yeah.
And we all said, don't worry, Dan, you're going to be back. You're one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And then you just had this emergence of the Bengals, the Broncos, the Bills. They just, I mean, it was just one thing after another. And then, oh, yeah, that other little team, Patriots, for one season.
Yeah.
Kind of ruined everybody's fun. I kind of see the writing on the wall here. Right now, I'm looking at the Bengals like, I wouldn't expect you to be in the Super Bowl, not with the Bills doing what they do, the Chiefs doing what they do, the Chargers coming up. Why would I think you, Bengals?
Yeah, that's a good point.
So I'm afraid. Yeah. And then we're looking at the Dolphins now, who are turning it on.
We're doing the same thing with Aaron Rodgers.
True.
But our Aaron Rodgers won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, at least he won one.
But we thought he'd be multiple participant after that, after they got there 12 years ago, whatever.
So, sorry, I went Bengals. Yeah. I went a little long on the Bengals at 28.
That's all right. 29 for me. That's where I put the Carolina Panthers. The Carolina Panthers have Baker Mayfield at quarterback, and for whatever reason, they're not a bad team, but they're not a good enough team. They've lost both games to Cleveland and the Giants on last second or near last second plus 50-yard field goals. That's a horrible way to lose. But Baker Mayfield and the Panthers are not quite clicking as well, and Christian McCaffrey hasn't gone off yet. There wasn't a lot of expectation here. I think that people were thinking, well, maybe they could, in a weak NFC, there might be a wild card team here. But yeah, I put the Panthers here at 0-2. It's not shaping up so far after 2 weeks the way I kind of thought. Healthy Christian McCaffrey and a rejuvenated Baker Mayfield, I thought they'd be better than this.
Well, number 29, this is where I had the Texans.
All right.
They're just a poor team, and I think they're going to be in the bottom five for a long time. So I'm not going to really go into how bad they are. I just think we're going to see them week after week after week. The reason why they're, you know, they landed in the bottom five, they could be lower, is because the Broncos literally gave them every opportunity to win that game, and the Texans said, no, thank you.
Yeah, I have the Texans as 30, and the reason I do is because they earned a tie against the Colts in the week one. That's a good, I mean, look, Lovie Smith should have been more aggressive, but hey, listen, it's the Colts, it's a divisional game, people think you stink, and then you tie, and you go, all right, fine. And then that game, they led the Broncos all the way through until the fourth quarter. They need to get touchdowns, and they didn't, but they didn't let Russell Wilson develop until late, so not
terrible. So you're giving
them
the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, you know, it's, I don't know. It's like when you have a C student as a kid, and he gets a B minus on a test. It's not the best, but you go, hey, it's better than what you normally bring home, young man, right? Like, I'm feeling like I'm giving credit for Houston for not being terrible like we anticipate. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like, yeah, all right, you lost that game, but you were winning. You were winning. Yeah. Maybe that's a little, I don't know, that's a little patronizing, but yeah, that's the way. That's why I put him at 30.
Well,
because I don't like the other two teams worse. How about that?
That works. You know, number 30 for me, this is where I have the Colts.
Colts.
I don't even know what to say anymore. We thought maybe Matt Ryan was better than Carson Wentz. I don't know. I don't think so anymore. And, you know, there's much credit if we've given this offensive line or this defense that this team has had, all the weapons that they have, man, they're not there.
Yeah.
Man, it's simple as that. I mean, they're just a terrible-looking team right now.
31 is where I had the Colts. What an awful, awful team this is right now. And maybe it isn't Carson Wentz's fault that they lost to Jacksonville. Right? If you're going to ship Carson Wentz out for losing to Jacksonville, it's a little too early to ship Matt Ryan out for doing the exact same thing. At least Carson Wentz scored. That's a bad, bad. That's terrible. We talked about this on Monday. It is so hard to get shut out in the National Football League. It is impossible to get shut out in the National Football League. Stop it. Yo, you should be able to drive down the field a little bit and let your kicker boot a 57-yarder through the uprights. Give me a break. And you to get nothing against Jacksonville? Like, I get it if you get nothing against Buffalo. Give me a break. Jacksonville? You put a zero up on the board and you tie Houston? These are two of the worst teams in the division. They might be the two worst teams in the AFC when 17 games are in the books.
True.
And you go 0-1-1 against them?
I don't know if they're going to be the worst team, to be honest with you.
In the AFC,
I don't think. I'm saying Jacksonville or Houston. I don't know. The way the Colts are looking right now,
they might be the worst team.
They might be the worst team in the AFC. They're definitely my worst team in the AFC right now.
They have a veteran quarterback and a running game with Jonathan Taylor and a defense that's supposed to get turnovers and a good offensive line. Give me a break.
Nothing.
You are 31, Indianapolis.
Well, 31 for me. This is where I have the Falcons. They moved up one notch.
Falcons, all right.
They moved up a notch from last week, Tony.
All right.
And that's just because, you know what, hey, they played against the Rams. They played them competitively. They lost by a point against the Saints. So I'm not going to say they're all terrible. I mean, they're terrible, but, you know, I found there to be a team that I feel is worse than them.
Well, I can't wait to hear what it is, because that's where I put the Falcons at 32. That's where I put them. I don't know, though. You're swaying me that I may be too harsh on a team that blew a gigantic lead at home against New Orleans. But their failed comeback, I mean, at least they came back.
Yeah.
I mean, the Rams were up by a bunch. I think they were up by, if I'm not mistaken, 21 points, and the Falcons had a chance. They had the ball with a chance to win it, and Jalen Ramsey had an interception. So they, all right. I'm now feeling bad that I.
No, you shouldn't feel bad at all. You shouldn't feel bad at all, because
you opened my eyes.
No, you had this team in your bottom five.
I did.
I just ranked them lower than you did, and that's the Panthers.
Oh, okay.
I have the Panthers as the worst team, because given the offseason that we just saw, Baker Mayfield was supposed to turn this team around. He hasn't, and now. The reason why I'm saying this is going to be a bad situation is that the fandom is already starting to split. And you're going to have, I think you're going to have a real quarterback controversy brewing. It's a good thing that Darnold is injured. So.
Yeah, no doubt.
If not, I think people will be calling for Darnold to start over Baker Mayfield. This was Baker Mayfield's chance to redeem himself, and he's not taking advantage of it
at all.
Listen,
even when Darnold was healthy, it was like, if you have two quarterbacks, you have none. They really do have none.
They have none.
Right? I'm sorry.
I don't get it. Team. Number one and number three pick just a few years back.
Yep, exactly. That's top five modified.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, top five, bottom five in the books as we roll along. Glad you could be with us. We've got, don't forget, later on this week, Friday, we'll go over all the games in week three, tell you what you should watch, maybe what you can avoid, etc. The Thursday night game tonight is going, Thursday night game this week is going to be Pittsburgh against Cleveland.
Must watch.
Must watch.
You know what? It's the only NFL game on.
That's right. It is the only NFL game on. Good point. Dan Wetzel at Yahoo Sports had a very good article about Deion Sanders. So Deion Sanders is the head coach at Jackson State. He's done a very good job at Jackson State. And, he's a really big personality. Right. I mean, he's in those ads with Nick Saban for Affleck. He's a big personality and he's very outspoken. And he's been that way since his arrival in our lives in the late 80s, early 90s, when he was a player at Florida State. And then he played for the Braves and the Falcons and he tried to do both sports and whatnot. And, he's been to the Super Bowl and played in a World Series and all of those things. But now he's a good football coach. So Dan Wetzel throws out the possibility that maybe Deion Sanders should become the head coach at Arizona State. So I'm with him on this, right? I mean, Sanders is not just an athlete taking a coaching job where he's just being who he is, right? And they just happen to win games. In his last 16 games, he's 3-0 this year. He is 14-2 in his last 16 games. And he also, remember, signed corner Travis Hunter, who was the number one recruit in the nation, brought them to an FCS school. I mean, that's insane. So Deion Sanders' name should be on the front page of every team, every college program that's looking for a coach. He's done the work. But my question is this, and really, I want a thought process here, Ron, because it's easy to just say, well, yeah, Deion Sanders, sure. If you're Deion Sanders, would you want to take this show to one of the top levels of college football? Or are you content being the best coach at Jackson State within that conference, within the limits of that program in terms of FCS school and whatnot? Or do you want to be in a Power 5 school where it's a little more, I don't want to say cutthroat, but I mean, you may get fired, and that may ruin a little bit of the Deion luster. Am I saying that correctly?
Well, yeah. But I mean,
like, you know what I'm trying to get at?
My only counter argument to that is, Herm Edwards may or may not have gotten fired on the field, by the way, which I think is hilarious.
Right, I know.
Well, I have no doubt in my mind that as soon as the announcement of him being fired was done, ESPN or some, CBS or whatever, someone was on the phone with him saying, hey, you want to join our team?
Right.
Then be an analyst again. And so we might even, it looks kind of weird right now with Herm Edwards, like, oh man, you couldn't do it at Arizona State. You thought you had all the right tools, blah, 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 blah. But in a few months or a year from now, we're going to be like, it's a small little blip on his radar. And I feel like that same thing will happen with Deion.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm worried about.
That if Deion is to, I don't mean this to be mean or pessimistic or insensitive or, throw any adjective you want in there. I still feel like him being a coach is a gimmick, and I don't know why.
Yeah, no, he's no. There's no doubt he's a good coach, and
that he knows his stuff. I have no doubt about that.
He's also coaching at Jackson State, right? Historically Black college and university program that he wants to help. He wants to bring a larger spotlight to those universities, those college and universities, and he's done a good job of that, right? It's been sort of the secondary focus outside of putting together a winning program at Jackson State is to highlight the excellence of the historical Black college and universities. That is a sort of a secondary goal. That's what I'm worried about with Deion a little bit. So I'm going to sort of rephrase it again. If Deion were to take a job, let's say at Nebraska, or take a job at Arizona State or at some other program where he comes in as prime, right? He comes in as Deion Sanders, but he also comes in as a good football coach. He showed that he's a good football coach. He showed that he's a good recruiter. The problem is that if you're Deion, do you want any of that luster to be diminished if circumstances beyond your control come where you can't get that program up and running? I think there's a lot of ways Deion Sanders has been able to work at Jackson State in terms of needing resources and recruiting that maybe at other programs he'd be limited by booster involvement or presidents or whatever, or just the general overall politics at a big university that could hamper the prime time Deion Sanders salesman that you need to be the top recruiter, right?
Yeah.
And I wonder,
I get what you're saying. I don't see him being a, you know, if he goes to a Power 5 program like in Arizona State or Nebraska, pulling five-star recruit after five-star recruit after five-star recruit,
exactly,
like Saban is able to do, or, you know, Ohio State, or, you know, Georgia is now getting into doing, like, you know, they're able to pull in five-star recruit after five-star recruit.
All right, outside of Travis Hunter, because Travis Hunter was I want to say very, very, very unique thing, right? To have the number one recruit in America go to an FCS school, right? When he could have gone to any of the other FBS schools, right? So that's different. So let's take Travis Hunter out of the equation for a second. When you're going after a group of kids that are going to be recruited by FCS programs, right? That are like, look, I'm not going to go play at Alabama, but here are the FCS schools that I can go to. Deion Sanders becomes extremely attractive. Right. He's a Super Bowl champion. He's a former NFL player. He's Neon Deion. He comes with a legacy and he's a good football coach. So you get all of that kind of rolled in to your experience at playing at Jackson State. There is going to be a different level of player that he's going to have to go after at Arizona State that might say, wow, Deion Sanders is in my house, but I'm really, really wanting to go play for Kirby Smart, or I want to go play for Lincoln Riley, or I want to go play for, you know, Jim Harbaugh or anybody else that's got a program in the top five, right? Or a top 10 of program, Ryan Day, for example. Now, he might be able to get some guys that want to be in the Pac-12. They might want to go play at USC. They might want to go play at UCLA, right? Like, whatever it is. So does Deion Sanders being Deion Sanders work on an upper echelon level? Again, take Travis Hunter out of the equation for a second, but would it work where it's consistently bringing in the top talent at Arizona State to co-play for him there when he could bring in very good FCS-level athletes to Jackson State?
And keep building his legacy there.
And keep building his legacy there. But I will say this. If and he has been extremely outspoken on this. Again, what he has said time and time again, he wants to continue the work at Jackson State for the benefit of historically Black colleges and universities. And that is a very noble goal that is going to not exist at all if he is the head coach at Arizona State, even from afar.
Right.
What I mean by that is that he can be the head coach at Arizona State and still tout for the HBCU schools, right? But he's not going to have the same impact unless he's in those schools. He's not going to have the same impact unless he is at one of those schools. And Jackson State is one of those schools. So if he's at Arizona State, it's more difficult for him to sort of promote those universities at Arizona State, but he can absolutely promote those universities within that program, within that group. So
do you think that if it's to open up, that he would jump all over a Florida State head coaching job?
You know what? I wonder about that. That's a great question.
Because I could see him. You know,
Mike Norvell doesn't work out eventually, yeah. And him going back there.
If he keeps having success at the FCS level and he's pulling in all these recruits, why wouldn't Florida State go? Bring in one of our own. Looks like he knows what he's doing.
Absolutely. And if you've gone down the road where Jimbo Fisher leaves, and then you bring in Willie Taggart, and that's a disaster. And let's say Mike Norvell doesn't do anything to turn it around. You might as well go back to a guy that's got a lot of flash, a lot of style, a lot of name, and people are attracted to. Yeah. That's another part of that equation, too.
Because if that's the case, then why,
to that school.
Why wouldn't he just want to stay in the area, keep recruiting that area?
Yeah.
And then if that job, because eventually, we all know these jobs are always going to open. You don't have Saban's running the world.
Yeah.
Like, we were joking about it last week. Jimbo Fisher is like, you see Jimbo Fisher on the hot seat.
You're right.
You know, I mean, they gave this guy nearly $11 million, and we're sitting there going, he might be on the hot seat now because he lost to App State.
I do want to say, by the way, Florida State's 3-0. I don't know how much of that matters, but nevertheless, Mike Norvell, I didn't want to bury Mike Norvell yet.
We're not kicking you out, Mike.
We're not kicking you out yet, but he's had a good season so far. But I think to me, listen, I know Deion Sanders, when he was playing, was very, very polarizing. I knew so many people that did not like him at all. He didn't like his act. Remember Tim McCarver, he threw the bucket of water on him.
Yep.
The two-sport thing was very distracting. But I always go back to that was a young man that was trying to do something really unique, that had an opportunity to do something unique, and he was being pulled in a lot of sponsor directions to try to do something like that. The people that he was attached to in terms of his merchandising and all of that stuff were really, really wanting to pull the dual sport angle. It didn't really work out the way we thought, but he ended up concentrating on football. He became, he became one of the best at his position. I worry, and this is what I worry about. I like Deion now. I liked him as a broadcaster. I certainly like what he's doing as a coach, and I like what he's doing, again, for not only Jackson State, but the historical black college and universities. I worry that this machine of college football, this big-time level of college football, could put a dim on the light of Deion Sanders. This machine can bury you. It can grind you down to nothing. It can make grown men cry. It really can. And some of the best have been able to avoid that. And some of the best have been able to just sort of rise above it. But I've seen a lot of good people get into that machine and get swallowed up and eaten up and their reputation destroyed. You remember when I was talking about Will Muschamp, how I hated him being hired as the head coach of South Carolina when he went through the machine at Florida? Will Muschamp is one of the most brilliant defensive coaches in the history of college football. And what do I know him as? A failure at two SEC schools. That's what this machine can do to you, right? It does it at the NFL level, too. Don't get me wrong. It does it at the NFL level as well.
Ah, North Turner. That's always my go-to.
Absolutely. Completely. No,
terrible head coach. Amazing offensive coordinator.
But in the end, college football, you get hit from... It's the old joke I keep saying all the time, but it's like at Office Space, where it's like, when I mess up my TPS reports, I got to hear it from five different people. When you mess up in college football, you hear it from five different people.
Maybe more.
The athletic director, the boosters, the president, the fans, the media. Like, you hear it from everybody. Like, everybody has a say, and I worry that if Deion goes to an Arizona State, and through recruiting and just talent and competition, he doesn't do the kind of things that he's doing immediately at Jackson State, that the neon Deion that I respect today, I didn't always respect it, but I respect today, that light goes out. And I don't want it to go out. That's just me. I don't want it to go out. So this is a cautionary story.
But here's the thing.
But if he's successful, look out. Look out. Right?
I don't think Deion ever lets the light go out, though.
Yeah, that's a good point.
His personality is way too larger than life that, if he could get fired from an Arizona State job or just have, be terrible at it, and he would still be the same Deion.
Real quick, one more final thought before we go. I will say that everybody is talking about Deion Sanders when they talk about him in a completely different way than he's been talked about as a showman, an over the top personality, great athlete, bigger mouth. He is doing great, great things at Jackson State. He really is. He is doing great things. He is really molding young men. That program has been really turned around. And I'm telling you, when they make, you know, when they play in one of those bowl games that you see, watch for them. It's been a rough 2 years with, we've had COVID 2 years ago and whatnot, but watch Jackson State and what they've been putting together. It's, they've been doing a really, really good job. So nevertheless, all right, when we come back, we'll wrap up this hour. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Philip on Twitter, here's an idea. At the end of every NFL season, the worst team in the league plays the best XFL team. The XFL team wins. They take that NFL spot.
Relegation?
Yes. You've been shouting that for a while.
I just wanted some sport in America. I think it would be fun.
I lived in Houston for 8 years, and that dumpster fire that's been the Texans, it might help motivate them. Good one. That is true.
What if, okay, you know, you go by that analogy, right? I don't know if it was, I can't, it's been so long now. I don't remember if it was the XFL or AAF or whatever, USFL. The Houston team that PJ Walker was on.
Oh, the Roughnecks.
The Roughnecks.
Yeah.
The Roughnecks. See, that would have been fun, right? The Roughnecks could have competed against the Texans to see who gets to be the NFL team in Houston.
That's true.
Do they have to swap places?
Yeah.
At that point, like, I think the Roughnecks were playing out of the University of Houston Stadium. Do they get all of a sudden, like, they get to move into NRG Stadium?
Yeah, that would be great. Would you imagine, can you imagine, like, an XFL team going, oh, my God, look at this. We get the this place.
Individual chairs, not a bench.
I was just thinking about that when we're talking about the college football machine, you know, how it's can right. wear you down. So I was just thinking about this, and I'll have to look into it. I'm trying to think of names off the top of my head. But if you're a successful college coach, right, you win a national championship or you're really good, you're a young coach, and you've got somebody, a lot of them have wanted to go to the NFL. But has a successful NFL coach ever gone, and I mean successful, you don't have to win a Super Bowl, you can just have gone to a Super Bowl or had some successful seasons making the playoffs. Did they go to college? Like, I know Bill Callahan went to Nebraska. He went, and I know that Lovie Smith went to Illinois, but like, I don't know how many successful NFL coaches went, no, I'm going to go coach the college game. I would love to see a list on that because I think it doesn't really reverse the other way.